Sandy moves on shore and the damage toll mounts.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM, I'm Jeff Horwich, in for Jeremy Hobson. People in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic are waking up this morning to perhaps the worst of what is now called Superstorm Sandy. It has dropped from hurricane status, but winds are still peaking at 90 miles per hour. That is the roaring wind in New York Harbor this morning, as broadcast from the EarthCam.com camera looking out from the Statue of Liberty's torch. The reported U.S. death toll from Sandy stands at 13. The night brought a storm surge of 14 feet to Manhattan. That means subways, tunnels, even the 911 site are inundated with water. A million people are under orders to evacuate across a dozen states. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is tallying the various numbers around the storm, and he's with me now live. Good morning, Mitchell.
Hi, Jeff.
Well, give us some sense of what we know this morning in terms of the damage, the impact on people.
Well, first, lots of people are without power. The latest numbers I'm seeing are 6.8 million, and it's over a huge swath of land. I saw one reference to perhaps 20% of the country's entire population lives within the broad footprint of this storm. The power outages are concentrated in the Mid-Atlantic. That's, you know, Delaware, New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania. But they reach from Maine to the Carolinas and west all the way to Ohio. Speaking of power plants, problems at a nuclear plant on the Jersey coast. This is the Oyster Creek plant. It's actually the oldest in the U.S. Because of rising waters, they've issued an alert and sent out federal nuclear inspectors.
And it's early yet, but what are we getting a sense of in terms of the total economic cost, potentially, of Sandy?
Well, a first ballpark estimate pegs an initial figure at $10 to $20 billion in total economic cost. Now, of that, probably half will actually be covered by regular insurance. That's for damage to homes, cars, businesses. To give you some context, Katrina in 2005, most expensive hurricane, nearly $50 billion in insured losses. Andrew in 92 came in about half that. This one will almost certainly be worse than Irene was last year.
And the New York Stock Exchange still closed again today.
Right. Though they'll be testing the electronic trading system to hopefully open again tomorrow, even if they can't open the building. Market officials do say that the trading floor itself is undamaged from flooding in lower Manhattan. They want to be able to trade on the last day of the month since brokers adjust their portfolios. John Canale is chief economist at LPL Financial.
The markets were closed in the aftermath of 9/11, and then so all the trades just catch up all at once. Once trading resumes, prices will just adjust to where they should be. But that first couple of days or so could be pretty volatile.
And by the way, last time the market closed for this long due to weather, 1888, a huge blizzard hit in mid-March, and it shut down Wall Street for 2 days.
Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
All right. You can track Hurricane Sandy with our live map and New York City weather cam. That's at marketplace.org. And let's do the numbers. As we said, U.S. stock markets will be closed again today. No word yet on the rest of the week. Stocks close mixed in Asia. European markets are higher in the early going. Continent-wide, the Stoxx 600 index is up about 0.5%. News of a corporate shakeup at Apple. The head of the company's mobile software unit is out, reportedly after he refused to accept responsibility for trouble with Apple's new Maps software. The head of Apple's retail stores has also been asked to leave after just 7 months on the job.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
In this last week before the election, our Marketplace Wealth and Poverty desk is profiling one of the stars of the campaign season.
Food stamps versus paychecks.
Today, 47 million people are on food stamps.
We spend all that money, and what do we have to show for it?
Since the primaries, Republicans have been talking a lot about food stamps as the way to make the argument that Americans are too dependent on government. In the second part of our series on food stamps, Marketplace's Shireen Marisol Meraji reports on the stigma of government benefit programs.
In Paul Gregory's view, getting food stamps used to be embarrassing. But now,
the government has chosen to take away the stigma associated with food stamps.
Gregory's not on food stamps. He's an economist and fellow at the Hoover Institution, a conservative think tank. He says the government renamed the program to SNAP to make people less self-conscious.
And don't ask me what SNAP stands for.
It stands for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. Gregory says a decline in the stigma means fewer people will look for help from charities.
There's an automatic assumption that the government will take care of this.
And Gregory says the government can't afford that. Spending on things like Medicaid, tax credits for the poor, and food stamps have grown in recent years, from one out of every seven federal dollars to almost one out of every five. Democratic Congressman Luis Gutierrez says the people in his predominantly Latino working-class district in Chicago need those services. And the attacks, he says, amount to class warfare.
Well, what do you think it is when people keep repeating and repeating ad nauseum for no good reason that there are so many people on food stamps?
This election, Gutierrez says food stamp recipients are the new welfare queens. Andrea Waterstreet is one of the 47 million Americans on food stamps. She's 44, disabled, and can't work.
And I had some mixed thoughts about coming into this interview because I'm, you know, out here saying I'm poor.
Waterstreet's been following the election closely and says all the food stamp talk stigmatizes poor people. She doesn't even like to use the term food stamps. She calls it EBT, for electronic benefit transfer. And Waterstreet says she's gone to charities for food, and those lines are beyond depressing.
Whereas when I get to use my EBT card, I feel like a normal person. I don't feel like, hey, you're poor, and everyone else knows it.
Andrea Waterstreet says there shouldn't be anything embarrassing about relying on the social safety net, regardless of the economic times. I'm Shireen Marisol Meraji for Marketplace.
Well, how well could you live off of $439 a week? That's the poverty threshold in the U.S. for a family of four. See if you can manage it using our family budget simulator. It's at marketplace.org. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.